Thank you, Sinead. Hello, good morning. You're very welcome to the programme. Between now and nine, trees on bogs, right or wrong, it's complicated. All the fun of the fair in County Down, the Carlow Farm where red meat and yoga sit side by side, and what is Ireland's national smell? Did you even know that we have a national smell? I didn't, but apparently it was nominated by the government of the day back in the 1990s. And back then, it was the smell of a peat fire. But we don't do that kind of thing anymore. So the International Smell Archive is being updated and we have to nominate a new smell of Ireland. Get texting people, 51551. What do you think it should be? 0870 32 32 32 is the WhatsApp number. At the moment in the poll, gorse is the runaway leader. 17.5% people think that that should be the new national smell, but there's a range of other options in there for you to choose from. We are going to be talking about that a little bit later on in the programme. Do you know what though? All of this weather has changed us, or at least it's changed the national mood. Do you even recognise the person looking back out at you from the mirror? And they are saying it quietly. They are saying it in hushed tones, touching wood as they do for fear of tempting fate. But things are looking pretty good for most farmers right now. Maybe a sup more rain would be nice, but when you compare 2025 with how things were looking this time last year, it is pretty good. Beef and dairy farmers in Northern Ireland are also enjoying the same kind of price boon that their colleagues south of the border are getting. And this week, just outside Belfast, the Royal Ulster Agricultural Show is running in Balmoral Show. Now, if you've never been, it is kind of like the ploughing meets the horse show meets the spring show meets Thunderland, all mixed up in one. I thought that this week it would be a good place to test the mood.
Hello, how are you doing? That's a pretty healthy looking haul of rosettes already.
That's good, isn't it?
Congratulations.
Thanks very much.
11 o'clock in the morning on the first day of the show, and Texel ram breeder James Cleland already has a half dozen rosettes and a cat that got the cream grin on his face.
And the number of rosettes that you walk away with, will that directly relate to how business is this year?
Well, it helps, but at the end of the day, you have to have good animals. You know, at the end of the day, you know, you have a person, kind of, the judge today was top notch, as good as a man it is. He's probably one of the most famous people in the taxes.
And what is your business? Are you selling stock rams or are you leasing out stock
rams? I breed rams to sell shearlings. I'm probably a wee bit unorthodox. Most people breed lambs to sell. I live very high up and live up at Dundrother, and you know, it's hard for me to do lambs, so I run them on a shearlings and sell them into mostly commercial men, anyway, but they go for where then they go on to breed lambs for the plate.
All right, this makes sense to me now. So your business really is entirely reliant on how good those rams are
and
what their reputation is like. Yep. So you have to be here.
That's true. Well, that's it. Well, that helps me because I'm probably a small fish in a big pond, really, you know, but it definitely does. It helps me a big lot, so it does, yeah.
Are you getting a good price this year?
Well, last year I done well, and I would like to think that we'll have better stuff again this year, so hopefully I'll improve on last year. That's your keep on their progress.
It strikes me that everybody has a bit of a pep in their step and a smile on their
face. Well, the farmer's doing it good, yeah, at the minute. Prices of sheep and cattle and all is very good at the minute, so it helps.
How you doing, gentlemen?
All right.
Last minute preparations?
Yep. Just trying to get her suited and booted here.
And what class are you competing in?
The intermediate heifers for the limbs.
Beside the cattle show ring, Robert Greer is primping and preening a Limousin heifer with hairspray in one hand and a comb in the other.
How many years are you coming to Balmoral, though?
Oh, I've been coming since I've been a kid, but this is the first year as an exhibitor, so it's a new thing. Hopefully it's catching.
How's your 2025 going?
Yeah, it's going good. The weather hasn't been too bad. I mean, just helps everything, I suppose, around the farming aspect. So, yeah, it's been pleasant to date anyway.
And where are you farming?
So we're County Down, Dromara, County Down. So not too far away.
Your colleagues south of the border probably wouldn't want to say this out loud for fear of jinxing it, but to them, 2025 is looking like it's going to be a pretty good year, a bumper year even. Does it feel like that to you so far?
I mean, you don't count your chickens, you know, until the eggs are hatched, I suppose. Like, so we just turn around, take each day as it comes, and we'll see how it is, and just keep doing what we're doing. I mean, we've got three hard times, so it's about time we had some sort of good, a bit more rewarding. Yeah. A bit more rewarding, I suppose.
Yeah. You're getting good prices, aren't you?
They're where they should be at. They're
good,
where they
good
should
answer.
Be at.
Good
you know,
answer.
That's what I say. It's about time we were getting rewarded for what we're doing. Like, so, yeah, no, it seems good at the minute, but it was a long time coming.
You see, if you're looking side on, it looks like a wine glass. It starts off. It'll start off sort of tapered and then come right down to the bottom of the leg. Yeah, yeah. So if you can...
Very long in the leg, very high in the tail, yeah, and the head below the tail.
Sort of come and level there, well, wine glass. If you can sort of squint your eyes, you're looking, you think you're going to lift a glass up.
Oh, absolutely, I see it now. Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's
yeah.
your glass. That's a very distinctive shape for that bird.
The poultry tent at Balmoral is most years a thing of wonder, with hundreds of the most exotic-looking hens and cockerels in competition. But the avian flu restrictions just lifted last week mean that only one token exhibitor with birds from a single flock could attend this year. That distinction was Robert McKelvin's.
How was it in the last couple of months? Did you lose any birds to the flu?
No.
You wouldn't be here, presumably.
Yeah. No, there's, to be honest, as far as I know, it's just really wild stuff that's flying in and out has been catching it. I don't think... There's none of the smaller purebred breeders actually has ever got it, you know. So.
Would your animals not be housed most of the time anyway?
They are all closed in, you see, but these birds here are like free range, you know, they like to be outside in the sun and stuff, so now we are allowed to bring them out now from last Saturday, so which is good.
You're here, but barely here, it just feels like
we've got our foot through the door really again, yes, that's right, yeah. But hopefully, I say, it's looking good now, because I say, I don't think there's been any reports since January, February time, okay. So...
Have you to restrict the number of members of the public that can come in? Is that why there's a barrier across the door?
No, at the minute, we're all judging just here at the minute, you see, so...
So I've walked right in here and shoved my size 10 into
the judging,
important...
In the judging, yes, you're right in the middle of the judging.
All right, I'll take my leave.
Back out in the baking sun, and I came across a little Dexter bull calf called Rocky lying down to take a break from the heat. And to stop anybody from accidentally treading on him, a protective circle of 7 people off school for the day had formed around him.
That's because she takes it a long walk, because everyone had turns with her, and then she's sleeping, and then she woke up.
So everybody wants to take Rocky for a walk, and Rocky needs a little bit of a rest.
Yeah. Feel under there. It's actually very dry. Did you know you have to feel the nose because it's very dry, and she's having a heat stroke. Rocky, don't put your feet in. Did you know every calf is a baby when there's a mummy?
Did I know that every calf is a baby when there's a mummy? Explain that to me.
Did you know a baby... A calf is in a mummy's tummy, and a mummy's tummy has a baby, and you have to put a baby out of the mummy's tummy because it'll actually hurt in mummy's tummy.
Do you have to jack the calf out?
Yeah, if they're not coming, you have to put the jack around the feet and help things along, yeah?
Yeah, like this.
Are you big enough and strong enough to do that?
Yeah.
Show me, go on, do it for me now. Oh, yep, yeah, that's a good firm, swift action. You know what you're talking about. How many times have you helped the calves to be born?
Loads of times.
Loads and loads of times.
Well, I tell you, my education was complete by the time that conversation was over. Now, obviously, the higher prices that farmers are getting are translating into increased pressure on consumers in the supermarkets. And we are going to examine whether or not these prices are here to stay in the weeks ahead on the programme. But for this one weekend, let us not begrudge the farmers their moment of blue skies and better prices. I will begrudge the next person who texts slurry as the new national smell, because there's 50 people in ahead of you with exactly the same suggestion. I love Sophia's 51551. She says that Ireland's new smell should be freshly cut grass and cow poo. Ah, let us move on. We will be dealing with that a little bit later on. 0870 32 32 32 for what you think the new national smell should be. When not crying into her cornflakes about the Eurovision this week, Brenda Donoghue was out in the sun as well. And Kira and Robert Stanley have a 60-acre beef farm in Tullow, County Carlow, which is also a one-stop shop, farm shop, for everything from Wagyu beef boxes to yoga and their own country fashion clothing brand. However, it was the Highland cows that caught Brenda's attention.
Right, Brenda, you're very, very lucky. Star of the show is here. This is Hector. He's getting very excited. There's a big bucket of meal here for him, so he's very, very excited. He's one of our Highland cows here.
He's a fine set of horns.
He does, yeah. And I tell you, when you get a dart of them, they're quite sore. I've got a few bruises from them over the years.
Yeah.
And then we have Pepper, who's our little calf.
Oh, Pepper.
She's a little dote. Oh. A lot shyer. He's a real bully. Yeah. Hey, Pepper.
Good girl. Good girl, Pepper.
They're shedding their winter coat at the moment, so when we're brushing out their coat, a lot of it ends up on the ground. But you know what? The birds love it here. We have so many old trees, so the birds love this now, and they'll use that in their nests. So it's all full circle around here. They're just beautiful. I just love them. I suppose this time of the year now, we're out watching the grass grow and getting ready for our first cut of silage. So that'll be all for our winter feed. I guess when I'm up here, and maybe in the evenings when I'm on my own, it's the sound, it's the quietness, it's all the smells, it's the birds. You can hear pheasants sometimes in the evenings. The cows are just chilled out chewing their cud. It's home as well. So we just take it all in. So it's quite nice that we've been able to open it up to people for them to enjoy it as well.
We're just into the field here now.
Have a look.
Just have a look at the cattle. I suppose like every farmer now, we're probably looking for a small drop of rain, which everyone doesn't really want. But we've been, I suppose, getting ready for our first cut silage. So we make all our own silage here to feed the cattle through the winter. All our own cows and all the Wagyu beef is fed silage here from the farm. So we try and be as self-sufficient as possible.
Guys, I feel like we should sit down in the grass here and have an ice cream.
Well, we can provide the ice cream. We have lovely ice cream in the shop as well.
Tell me, first of all, about the two of you. Teenage sweethearts, is that what I'm hearing, Robert?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
We went to school together.
Did you fancy each other in school?
No, I actually didn't want to be in the same room as him for a long time, to be honest. Yeah, Robert did a bit of summer work with my dad when we were in secondary school, and I used to give out to Daddy as to why he would have Robert around, seeing as I couldn't stand him. My dad kind of quietly reminded me, you could do with a lift, you know, out of Carlow there some nights, Kira, so might be a bad match. So he wasn't wrong. We started going out then later on in, as we were teenagers, and just haven't looked back since. And we've travelled the world together. We've started this, the farm shop, which is, I suppose, created from both of us our love of food and the food production, and you know, knowing where our food came from. So it was always something, how could we incorporate that into the farm, and I suppose bring this back to life a little bit as well.
So you both had this dream.
Yeah.
But it's one thing having a dream, it's another thing actually implementing it.
Yeah.
And now you have the shop, and you have these infamous beef boxes that you sell. Tell me all about that. How did it happen, Kira?
Well, actually, I think it was over the kitchen table during COVID. We knew we were breeding really, really good animals. We knew we had really good beef. The beef boxes we started out with. So the beef that we sell through our boxes and through the shop is a Wagyu crossbreed. So it's a highly marbled beef, which adds to the taste and to the flavour of the beef. So you have a higher fat content, which kind of, when you're cooking it, melts down and gives it that kind of buttery flavour and texture. So it is, it's really
very
good.
Very nice. Yeah.
Really good. So we're very, very lucky here. From our gate to the butcher is a mile. So by the time our animal leaves here, the food miles are as far as we know, one of the lowest in the country for beef in food miles. So, you know, you can't get much closer to grass to plate.
Here, Hector. Come on. Lying. They're not too inclined to move now because it's in the sun.
Are these show calves? Tell me about them.
They're called hybrid cattle, so they're a mixture between the two pedigrees. So we breed pedigree Belgian Blues and pedigree Limousines and cross them, which gives you the what people call show cattle. So we have a little heifer there, a little red roan heifer. So she's hopefully this year's main prospect.
It's a really, really good time of the year. The sun is out. We're thinking of the summer. This week, obviously, Balmoral Show is on, so we're hoping to head up to it, as a lot of farmers will be thinking the same. But we actually, this farm hosts the Tulla Show. So the Tulla Agricultural Show is held every August, and this year will be its 75th year anniversary. It's real nostalgia. It's because it's the end of August. Like as a kid, when you were coming to it, you knew it was nearly time to go back to school. So that's kind of like, you know, that's the nostalgia part of it. So that's lovely, and it's lovely to be part of that. So Brenda, we're going to head into the shop now. This is my pride and joy. So okay. This is our farm shop.
Wow.
We have all our meat here. We have our own brand of clothing, all the foods.
Your own brand
see.
Of clothing?
Yeah.
Did you design them?
Designed Ballybar, Ireland. Wow. So we have our own brand of country clothing. We have all our food here is all Irish, the best of Irish artisan food. We have the best customers that come up day after day to support us. So
okay, wonderful. Hello, everybody. Hi.
So now Brenda over here, actually Katie, a girl from Tullow, she runs some yoga classes here during the summer and in the winter. So in the summer we're outside, in the winter we're in the coffee bar and the fire is lit. It's really, really nice.
Now come into our warrior two, let your back foot fall in, arms extended, nice and wide. Beautiful.
Sorry, class, can I just grab Katie, is it?
Yes, of course you can.
Hello, Katie, you're the yoga teacher here.
I am.
A yoga teacher on a farm. Tell me all, how did that come about?
I actually live in the countryside myself, and I taught a yoga class in my back garden, basically the backfield. And Kira saw it, and she reached out and asked would I be interested in doing classes here. And it is the most amazing location to do it. We are outdoors, you're getting your fresh air, you've got the animals all around you, and it's such a nice feeling, especially those early mornings. We're coming in at 8 a.m. and you've got your yoga class here, and then you can have your coffee and chat with everyone for the day. And we often do them in the cow shed around the back as well. So the cows are sometimes looking at us wondering what's going on. The cows can actually feel the energy of it. It's funny, when you first walk in, they're running around the place, and by the end, once they relax with the music and the energy in the space, they're all lying down, chilling out as well.
Just before we leave the girls to finish their class.
Hello.
Katie is our Carlo Rose, something we're very, very proud of, and something she downplays a little bit, but we're very, very excited for her, and we have high hopes for Katie.
Oh, Katie, the best of luck, so.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Can't wait.
That's a creative idea, Kira. Is that all about thinking outside the box to make this place a destination?
Yeah, so I think one thing that we've learned is it's the sounds, it's the calmness, and it's, I suppose, making that, you know, into that, the yoga class, the sound baths, and for people to actually come up here and just completely relax and soak it all in and get a real feel of the countryside and the space that's around them. And I'm not just saying this, I genuinely do pinch myself, you know, that we've created this, like to go from a cardboard box selling beef to a shop on our farm, surrounded by the animals, surrounded by grass, green trees. We're so lucky, but sometimes you just get caught up in the daily grind that you don't see that. And it's just when you look back at what we've come from and what we've achieved, like it's amazing. Like we're really, really proud of it.
Sorry, Katie, back to your class.
Okay, everyone, taking a deep breath in through the nose and exhale, just draw that belly button back in. Let that all go.
I thought Brenda Donoghue was looking a good bit calmer. Now I understand why. Kira and Robert Stanley on Coppena House Farm. More information, coppenafarm.ie, coppenaghfarm.ie. Still plenty of suggestions for the smells. You've moved on from slurry, and now a good number of you are suggesting petrichor, that smell that comes after a fall of rain, after a long period without it. The spicy earth scent that comes from the soil and the hedgerows after rain, and exquisite, if indefinable, enveloping of the senses. Yes, but that's a universal smell. That is not one that is unique to Ireland, which is our quest for this morning after the break.
Email countrywide@rte.ie. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
Now, in case you are mystified by what it is that I'm talking about all of these smells, and you missed the top of the programme, we are asking this morning, what is the quintessential smell of Ireland? Because there is actually an official smell nominated by the government for inclusion in a project to create a global archive of smells. But that was 25 years ago. And back then, the government of the day decided that our official smell would be burning turf. But now that we are preserving bogs and no longer burning them, the person behind that project, Gail Nalls, wants us to update our smell. Now, she has drawn up a suggested list of 27 wild plants and flowers and seaweeds, and she wants you to vote for the one that you think says most clearly, this is Ireland. Early polling puts gorse several lengths clear of everything else. There's hawthorn in there, there's honeysuckle, there's meadowsweet, but gorse is 17.5% if you think the smell of Ireland. We met up with Gail on a recent visit here to Ireland and a walk through the gorse on Bray Head in Wicklow.
Of course, a number of Irish people live in New York and other places in the world. And one of the things they always ask when you say you're going to Ireland is to bring them back some turf. That memory of the burning turf is Ireland to them. So what now? Now we're almost a generation into the slow reduction of burning turf, where people aren't experiencing it anymore. It's no longer the common scent that everybody could recognize. What will it be? Because it's very important. It fills a huge cultural need that helps us bond. I mean, it helps us understand who we are, understand place, understand what things mean to us. It defines things, family, getting together, warmth, security, all these things. So what can feel differently, but what can be that bonding agent? Up in the high fields above where we're standing, there are gorse plants, who knows how long they've been there. And that is most certainly a unifying smell. The smell of gorse is an inspiring smell because it's both powerful and subtle at the same time, I think. It does smell a bit like coconut, but it's also sweet and greenish and quite pleasant. Somebody told me just recently that when they grew up, their mother washed their clothes and hung them out all over the gorse bushes to dry. And the gorse smell dried into their clothes every day, and so that they wore them, and that how delightful it was to be able to work all day and smell the gorse on your skin coming from the clothes. And I thought, how wonderful. You know, we should all be so lucky. It's important to honor and protect the smell of the plants of a region, because these are how we know a place. These olfactory communications are stimuli that help you know where you are in this world, that they communicate with you on a subconscious level and a conscious level, and they are modulating your behavior, they are creating your mood, and they are influencing you in ways that most people don't realize and aren't fully appreciating until they're gone. People who lost their sense of smell during COVID, the emptiness that they felt was so profound that many people go into deep depressions from it. If this stimuli is suddenly this that's running unconsciously at every breath that we take in, where these molecules from these plants are embodied in us, are gone, it's like the background programming is dropped out of your life, with it goes the meaning.
So to apply their questions to Gail's, they apply their noses even to Gail's question. I'm joined from Kerry by Mo Stafford of Skellig Coastal Kitchen, and from Clare by Sadie Chowan of the Burren Perfumery. Good morning to both of you. Mo, you've already voted for your scent of Ireland. What did you choose?
Good morning, Philip. How are you?
Very good.
Good. I chose the crabapple flower.
Oh.
As my favourite. I know.
I have no idea what that smells like now.
The crabapple flower is gorgeous. It's a very, very fragrant, you know, it's got that gorgeous, sweet, fragrant, spring-like aroma. It's just gorgeous. And it's a beautiful, beautiful flower, of course, as well.
That's the smell of spring, though. Mm. Now that we're in, you know, the vibe is very much more summery. Would you change your mind? I mean, you are in Derrynane. You must be blinded by the gorse.
Listen, it's like trying to choose your favourite child, your favourite pet, isn't it? It's ridiculous, to be honest, down here. I went on a little walk. There's a lot. There's bluebells, which are also spring, which is a real favourite of mine. But in the summer, obviously the honeysuckle, the meadow sweet. But guess what? I went on a bit of a walk last night in the evening time because of this. I said, I'm going to go out now and I'm going to have a little look around. And I started looking, you know, as I do. I always stop along the verges and things. But I really got down low to the ground last night to flowers that we all know so well. And I started picking things like clover, you know, the red clover, which are, you know, they're very abundant at the moment. My gosh, my gosh. When you pick a red clover in the evening time, have you any idea? The scent is just divine.
Go on, what?
So, pardon?
What does it smell of?
It smells of summer. It smells sweet. It smells, it's just a joyous, gorgeous aroma of summer, of warmth. It has a lovely, ripe, warm, beautiful perfume. I think it's got a little bit of sweetness. It's quite subtle, but it's just gorgeous. It smells of, you know, it's got that old-fashioned powdery sort of smell that we associate almost with, you know, the days of nostalgic days, maybe of your grandmother and that powdery, beautiful perfume. Sweet, very sweet.
Sadie really Chow and the Burren Perfumery. Not much clover in the fields around you, I would imagine, but plenty of orchids.
Wonderful orchids. In fact, one of my contenders would be the wild fragrant orchid, which is just grows everywhere here in the grasslands of the Burren, probably in early July, so not quite outlet, but it's so fragrant and delicate. And I love the fact that you have to actually lean down into it and smell it. So it's incredibly exotic for somewhere like the Burren, which is has a palette of very delicate, quiet scents. So I would agree that the honeysuckle, which is woven through all the hedgerows and the meadowsweet and the hawthorn are all wonderful. But I think that we could go for something like the wild fragrant orchid, or even my favourite is the wild burnet rose. The wild burnet rose is a rose that grows in the crevices of the Burren, and a little like the blossom of the crabapple tree, it's incredibly delicate.
Okay, I hate to be a
rosy
pedant, though,
and honeyed.
Sadie, I have to pull you up because the orchid would be very local to the Burren and not necessarily a national smell.
No, but the wild burnet rose would be much more widespread.
So is that your nominee?
I say that was my nominee, yeah. I spent 4 years making a perfume around the wild burnet rose, which I'm very proud of. I'm also working on gorse, a perfume around the gorse. So I do love the gorse. I love its coconut, vanilla scent, and it has a little hint of pineapple if you smell very carefully.
Well, I can't, because I belong to that very small genetic subset that cannot smell gorse at all. So I think there's some kind of a karma here for having a silly West Brit name, that if gorse is the new national smell, I have never smelled it and I never will smell it. Is that a difficulty for you as a perfumier, that people do perceive smells very, very differently?
I love that. I love that each scent and each smell is personal to people. And yes, we get hundreds and hundreds of people and they all smell things differently. But it's like colours. If you think that what you're looking at or what you're smelling is what your husband or wife or child or friend is smelling, and actually it's not. It's incredibly personal. There's always a slight variance. And things like sandalwood, some people can't smell sandalwood, or some people, we just don't smell things in the same way. And I love that. You're creating your own connection with your life, with your memories, with your emotions, and with your sense of place.
Well, it makes,
and I think that's lovely.
It makes securing agreement on what is the smell of Ireland even harder than you would imagine. Mo and Sadie, thank you both very much. If you want to vote, worldsensorium.com is where you will find all the information and the poll on this. Worldsensorium.com. Sadie and Mo and Gail, thank you all very much. The junior minister in the Department of Agriculture, Michael Healy-Ray, walked into what became quite the controversy this week when he suggested that landowners should be allowed to plant trees on bogs. Furious debate ensued about whether this was environmentally advisable or not, and it went back and it went forth throughout the course of the week, ending in an inconclusive and a tense standoff. What was missing from that debate was some expert opinion. And there was a gathering of just such a group of experts this week in Ennistymon, County Clare, for the Home Tree Changing Landscapes Conference, exploring new ideas about nature conservation. Lots of people who knew about bogs, lots of people who knew all about trees. I asked them about Minister Healy-Ray's proposal.
So my name's Shirley Clarkin and I'm the project manager for a wetlands restoration scheme in the Midlands in the green transition area called Toher.
What do you think of the idea of planting trees on peatlands?
Well, I think it's a very complicated issue and a very complex issue and nuanced, because first of all, you have to consider what type of peatland you're talking about, what condition they're in, how much peat is on them, for example, how much is left, whether they're being extracted or not. And then, of course, what kind of forestry you're talking about, whether you're talking about deciduous woodland, whether you're talking about maybe land that has kind of regenerated itself into woodland, so naturally ecologically succeeding woodland, for example, or whether you're coming in and, you know, planting species in straight lines.
I don't think anybody is talking about planting trees on pristine blanket bog or raised bog, though, are they?
No, I don't think so. I hope not at this stage.
Is there an argument to be made, perhaps, though, for planting trees on the peatland that has been disturbed, that would take hundreds of years to restore to pristine peatland?
I think there is, particularly when you've got a very, very thin, you know, layer of peat left, you know, so it's a really extracted site, and maybe you're down to the marl or very, you know, subsoil underneath that. I think there probably is, because the trees that are going to go and that will sequester more carbon. So if your carbon store is gone, I think trees probably can be worth more per square hectare, you know, than trying to restore it into a wetland if you're thinking about climate change at this point in time.
So, yes, Minister Healy-Ray, but give us a little bit more detail, please.
I would say let's talk with everybody, Minister Healy-Ray, and give everybody more detail. And I think as well to show a picture of what that might look like.
Paddy Bruton, and I'm the Managing Director of Forestry Services Limited and Euroforest Ireland in Ireland, two private companies. We operate in the private forestry sector, operating in everything from the planting of land for farmers principally, but also do some state work, right through to the harvesting of crops at the end of the rotation and replanting them.
Should we be planting trees on peatland?
Okay, there's an awful lot of confused and uninformed comment on this, Philip. And none more so than maybe on the Katie Anna show last Monday evening. There is undisturbed peat that has never been drained, that is a current carbon store, that should not be planted with any form of trees. That should be left as is, and the owner should be rewarded for that, because it's currently fulfilling an ecosystem service. But there are lands that have been reclaimed, have been drained, have been disturbed, that were formerly peat, that are now being farmed and are grasslands. Now, those grasslands are suitable for forestry and can grow a variety of trees, including conifer trees. Now, that's the type of former peatland that has been disturbed and reclaimed that should be eligible for afforestation. So that's why I would support Minister Healy-Ray in what he has been saying about expanding the pool of land for afforestation in Ireland, but nobody is talking about planting undisturbed virgin peat grounds that are currently fulfilling biodiversity and carbon sequestration functions.
My name is Marina Conway and I'm with Home Tree. I'm the head of woodlands and land partnerships with Home Tree. So as a forester, I think a lot of what animates people is the discussion around these intensively modified and intensively farmed peatland soils that have been reclaimed and farmed for maybe 70 or 80 years. So what's the carbon balance here? If you're continuously farming that, if you're continuously maintaining the drains, if you're fertilising that land, and if you're spraying any herbicides on it, and as well the animals that are grazing it, versus if you were to do no drainage and let's say no fertiliser, invert mound and put native trees on it and grow a native woodland, which one is going to be more, you know, which one is going to have a greater carbon balance? I don't think the science is out there on that.
I can't answer that question either, but intuitively you'd have to say it probably sounds or feels like the latter.
That trees would be have a greater carbon.
Well, there might be all sorts of other co-benefits for water and for biodiversity.
There's plenty of other co-benefits, but I think around the whole argument around this 30 centimetre rule, and this is where this discussion is coming from. It's about the 30 centimetre rule that any modified peatland soil that is greater than 30 centimetres cannot come into the afforestation scheme, so it cannot come in for woodland creation. The carbon is the big thing that is driving that decision, not necessarily the ecosystem, other ecosystem services. They're not looked at all in this situation. So 100%, if you're talking about water and habitat creation, absolutely, I would say it beats it hands down. But it's carbon is the sole thing that is driving that argument.
Marina Conway, I bet that wasn't what you were expecting to hear on that one. New national smell of Ireland, your texts, slurry, 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 Guinness, slurry, yes, messers. There's a few white thorn, freshly baked brown soda bread, but slurry and slurry. I shouldn't have told you not to do that, really. It was a kind of a red rag to a bull, wasn't it? Finally this morning, to highlight that it is National Biodiversity Week, we are going to cast an eye over just one of the many things happening around the country to conserve nature. The Connecting Cabra Biodiversity Festival in Dublin 7 persuaded the Church of the Most Precious Blood's parish priest, Father Joe Spring, to give some space to nature in the form of a pond in the church grounds. Regan Hutchins went to take a look and met Father Joe and Katrina Kenny.
Do I see tadpoles?
You see loads and loads of tadpoles, yeah. This is the life.
Here's where the living is. It's gone from a patch of grass to a hole, to a pond, to a hole again, when the pond didn't take the first time and the second time. But to see this kind of natural pond without a pond liner, without plastic sticking out, with a lovely space beside it for people to gather is... Breathe in that air. In the middle of an urban setting is wonderful. And you can even hear all the birds.
Just over there I see dandelions, cowslips...
Glad you saw the cowslips. There's a good lot of them here. In my farming background, like, they're the kind of things you try to dig out and get rid of.
Yeah.
The poor old dandelions turning their unloved faces to the sun, as someone called them. And yet, look how they integrate so beautifully into this.
What are all the logs doing there?
The logs are a good place for spiders to hide. If you put holes in logs, it's a good place for solitary bees to nest and... they're just in a really important habitat. There's lots of creatures that enjoy dead wood.
Hi, folks. How are you doing?
I think it's hugely inspiring when you meet a group of volunteers that we all don't have the same necessarily beliefs or the same end goal in mind, but we all care about the planet and about the people and other creatures that exist on it. It has been a game changer for us working with the churches.
The many inspiring phrases that Pope Francis left us in the document on the environment, Laudato Si, God rest him now, we're not owners of the earth, we're stewards, we're caretakers. And I suppose anybody that was brought up with a reasonably vocational aspect of farming and that would identify very strongly with those sentiments.
The Biodiversity Festival is taking place here on the grounds of the church, and right now inside the sacristy there's a meeting with members of the parish council and Connecting Cabra. Even a day-long festival takes a lot of planning, and Michelle Nolan is setting out the stalls.
The other stall then is Jeff's Gontamanda, is the greening of Fossa Avenue from the Bogies roundabout all the way down to a tractor road at the club. Trees, tree pits planted up, flower beds, and the idea is that kind of there's somewhere for rainwater to kind of go in into that as well. What we have is a project called Adopt a Tree. So for anybody who lives on Fossa Avenue and all the roads off Fossa Avenue, everybody can get a free tree in their garden, paid for by Dublin City Council.
Can we have a nature table with...
Yes.
You know the way I have loads of skulls and yes. antlers and all that sort of stuff, and I just thought that that was great.
Yeah, we did that last year.
Are you laughing, Brian?
Sorry, yeah. It's just where did you get the skulls?
My husband ordered them for me online.
You know, lies.
Animal skulls. But
you just found them.
But also some kind of nature art activity would be good as well. So I could do like a children's area.
Okay.
Yeah.
That brings me on to the next part. I have access to lovely farmyard manure. So I was thinking of bringing that up, right? It's full of worms as well. I just thought
this is going to be the festival of skulls and poo.
Yes.
You're not really selling it. But, yeah. But don't worry, we'll have nice cake.
My last stop is over to Cabaret East, and I'm cycling over the railway bridge to meet Desmond O'Donoghue, who's standing in his garden, very excited about meeting a new tomato plant. Desmond is part of a WhatsApp group called Cabaret Plant Share, where members simply share plants and seeds and excess material from their gardens. They share knowledge and skills. And it's also a chance to get to know the neighbours. Breach Foy, who set up the group on WhatsApp, is also with him. And hopefully, Stacey Lawler is on her way over, carrying a tomato plant for Desmond.
Here in Cabra, there's so many people that had got gardens and have covered them over with concrete. To take up a whole garden, simply to put a card into it. How are you? There you are.
Is that my tomato plant?
Tomato plants for you, Desmond.
Oh, thank
so you've
you.
Got
oh, very nice.
That's your marigold there.
Oh, look at that. Isn't he beautiful?
So hopefully it'll grow and get you lots of fruit.
Stacey, are you involved in gardening as well, or why did you join this group?
I just enjoy gardening. I just love being out in the garden, and I wouldn't be any expert or I wouldn't have much knowledge. I know what I like and I'll plant it and hope for the best. It'll pop up, and so far it's been working. And I suppose my grandmother used to be very proud of her garden, and I actually own her house now.
Where's that, in Cabra?
It's in Cabra, yeah. So she was always very proud of her garden, and I suppose I kind of inherited that a little bit, where I wanted to keep the garden looking nearly as well as she had it.
So my name is Breach Foy, and I live at Animo Park. We all know in recent years our biodiversity is suffering, and it's not just about the insects and wildlife in the community, it's also about the people within the community. And when you're walking to work, passing gardens, it's a moment of reflection, it's a moment of joy, watching the bees, watching the birds. If you're passing paved garden after paved garden, it's a bit sad.
There's nothing to say, and there's no people out doing anything.
Yeah.
And Breach, you're going to be representing the Cabaret Plant Share at the Cabaret Biodiversity Festival.
Yeah, so I'm going to bring a stall with some plants and seeds to share. People will be welcome if they have something to bring, to swap, or to just take what we have to offer. It'll be a really nice way to introduce more people to the group, and hopefully we'll get a load of new members and some new plants.
Regan Hutchins reporting there. That Connecting Cabaret Biodiversity Festival kicks off at 1 o'clock today. Your nominations for the Smell of Ireland: smell a bag of tato opened on the beach. Chips, say a number of people. Brown soda bread coming up again and again. Guinness hops. Most of you, though, have stopped texting slurry and started texting Guinness farts. You useless bunch of absolute messers. I don't know why we bother. Right, that's all that we have time for today. Amandine smells of croissants. Jamie smells of freshly dug soil. Brenda Donoghue smells of fire, brimstone and burning car tyres. Have a good weekend. Talk to you next week.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.